This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Jody Rosen, is a rock critic who has gone back to early pop, way back, for his new anthology. It features 16 Jewish dialect novelty recordings from the early 20th century. Rosen called the collection Jewface because, like blackface performers of the same period, the Jewish performers of this material often dressed in stereotyped ways with fake big noses and old baggy overcoats. Many of the lyrics reflect the stereotypes of the day, too, even though most of the material was written and performed by Jews for Jewish audiences. Some of the songs in this genre were written by Irving Berlin. A few years ago, Rosen wrote a book tracing the history of Berlin's song White Christmas. Here's a track from Jewface recorded in 1908. It's called I'm a Yiddish Cowboy.
I'm a Yiddish Cowboy, sung by Edward Meeker, Edison Records. In the wild and woolly prairie land lived a cowboy by the name of Levi. He loved a blue-blood Indian maiden and came to serenade her like a tough guy. Big Chief Crawler Legs was the maiden father, and he tried to keep Levi away. Levi didn't care for every evening. With his bronco buster, giddy-up, giddy-up, he'd come around and say, whoa!
Tough guy Levi, that's my name, and I'm a Yiddish cowboy. I don't care for Tommy Hoyks or Cheyennes, Indians, oi, oi! I'm a real-life Simon Sheik that shoots them till they die. I'll marry Spot, Tati Boss, or I'm a fighting guy.
Jody, how did you first discover this genre of Jewish dialect recordings from the early 20th century?
I was, about a dozen years ago, I was in graduate school in London, of all places. But I, at the time, was interested in writing something about Jewish songwriters and kind of the assimilation of Jewish immigrants. I was pretty vague about it. But I spent a lot of time in the British Library, where they had enormous sheet music holdings. And I was kind of digging through some songs one day, and I happened upon a song called I Want to Be an Oi, Oi, Oiviator, which was from, I think, 1915 or 1916, a time when there were a lot of kind of topical novelty songs about airplanes and aviation. And this was a sort of Jewish-themed variation on that. And so this really tickled me. I want to be an oi oi oiviator. I thought this was the funniest and weirdest thing I'd ever seen, and assumed it was kind of a one-off novelty. But as I began to dig deeper, I realized that this was, you know, just one of hundreds, thousands of songs that were written. That this was a full-fledged genre. That, you know, really the Jewish equivalent of blackface minstrelsy.
Well, you know, America's, like, you know, best known and perhaps most beloved songwriter Irving Berlin got started writing these ethnic songs, and you include one of them on your CD, and the song is called Cohen Owes Me $97. How many of these kinds of songs did Irving Berlin write? Like, where does it fit into his career?
He wrote lots of them. He was one of the kind of big and most successful specialists in the genre. Of course, he wrote songs in all of the ethnic genres. He did, you know, well, famously did blackface material, and did a lot of these Jewish songs. But he also, you know, wrote songs like Italian songs. His first published song was called Marie from Sunny Italy, which was written in 1907 and was an Italian number. He also wrote a number called Hey Wop, to give you a flavor of, you know, some of the language that was used in these songs. But anyway, yeah, he was something of a specialist in the Jewish stuff. So he, one of his big hits from 1909 was a song called Sadie Salome Go Home, which is about a kind of a Jewish, you know, burlesque kind of striptease dancer woman, Jewish woman. And this was the first big hit for Fanny Bryce. And then there was Cohen Owes Me $97, which he wrote several years later in 1916, which was also something of a hit. And it tells the story of Old Man Rosenthal, who's a Jewish businessman, or kind of someone in the shmata business, you know, in the clothing business, who's on his deathbed, and his kind of dying wish is to see that his son recoups his unpaid debts from other businessmen. Because after all, you know, he's Jewish, and the joke is that, you know, all they care about is money. And the kind of punchline of the song is his son manages to get his $97 paid back. And then, of course, the old man Rosenthal miraculously rises from his deathbed and lives again. So the recording on the record is by a wonderful singer called Rhoda Bernard. And one of the joys for me in collecting this stuff has been to discover some of them real extraordinary singers who have just completely been lost to history. And I especially like Rhoda Bernard. She's got quite a big, booming voice.
Well, let's hear some of Cohen Owes Me $97, sung by Rhoda Bernard, recorded in 1916, and featured on Jody Rosen's new anthology, Jew Face, which is a collection of Jewish ethnic recordings.
Soon his son was sitting by his bed. "But don't matter, Papa, dear," he said. The old man said, "My son, before my days are done, I want you to know Cohen owes me $97, and it's up to you to see that Cohen pay. I sold a lot of goods to Rosenstein and Son, and I owe you for 90 days. Levi brothers don't get any credit, why they owe me for 100 yards of lane. Now if you promise me, my son, you'll collect from everyone, I can die with a smile upon my face."
That's Cohen Owes Me $97, written by Irving Berlin, and featured on the new anthology Jew Face, which is a collection of Jewish ethnic comedy recordings from the turn of the 20th century. And my guest, Jody Rosen, is the curator of the anthology. He's a music critic who writes for Slate. People will really wonder, listening to this, is this music, is it racist? Is it anti-Semitic? I mean, what is this music about? It's Jewish performers self-stereotyping. Was this common of Jewish ethnic humor at the time?
Yeah, it was. You know, this whole genre that we called Jew Face on this record, at the time they were called referred to as Hebrew dialect songs or Yiddish dialect novelties. These were songs that partook of sort of age-old, somewhat virulent anti-Semitic stereotypes. The lyrical content often involves kind of money-grubbing Jews and, you know, sort of bumbling greenhorn immigrant Jews making fools of themselves. And they were typically performed on vaudeville by so-called Hebrew comedians who put on a sort of uniform, dressed up in stereotypical garb. So they wore derby caps that were pulled down tight across their head so their ears jutted out, and they had these enormous kind of fake noses that were enhanced with what was called Jew clay in the trade, you know, sort of putty. And they wore ratty overcoats, and the type they were playing was a sort of a Lower East Side, you know, pawn shop owner or rag tradesman. So it really was a sort of Jewish equivalent to blackface minstrelsy or Jewish minstrelsy act. The interesting thing about these, though, is that while they were, on the surface at least, quite anti-Semitic, they were largely written by Jewish songwriters. The songs were published by Jewish-owned song publishing firms, performed on vaudeville circuits where Jews predominated, both as, you know, kind of on the business end and as performers. And Jewish audiences loved them. There were campaigns organized by certain parts of the Jewish community, by kind of advocacy organizations like the Central Conference of American Rabbis, to try and wipe out this brand of entertainment. But there were editorials in the Jewish press that denounced these efforts because they pointed out that it was actually Jews who went and applauded and laughed and loved these things, these songs, more than anyone else.
Yeah, you know, in your liner notes, you quote from the Central Conference of American Rabbis, which was the Reform Movement's governing body, and you say that in the era of these songs, this group launched a nationwide campaign to, quote, drive this vile, outrageous, and undignified creature from the boards, the creature being this type of ethnic humor, and the boards being the theatrical boards, this music is still controversial. There was a New York Times article about the anthology that you put together, Jewface, and in that article there was a quote from Kenneth Jacobson, the deputy national director of the Anti-Defamation League, and he said that a project like this, quote, gets very complicated. Our experience in this kind of thing is that inevitably somebody will probably use this for not such good purposes, unquote. So I'm wondering if you're at all ambivalent about, you know, putting this stuff out there again and, you know, playing it on the radio.
Yeah, I'd say slightly ambivalent, with an emphasis on slightly. And, you know, sometimes when people come over to my house, I collect not only the, you know, the 100-year-old recordings on kind of 78 discs and wax cylinders and this stuff, but I also collect sheet music, which is, you know, often very garishly illustrated sheet music with, you know, pictures of Jews with big noses and such. So it's, I guess, a bit, yes, problematic. On the other hand, this is part of history, and moreover, it's fascinating. So my ambivalence is tempered a great deal by the fact that I think it's important for both kind of Jewish history, for historians to acknowledge complicated, maybe not so morally clean-cut aspects of Jewish experience. And moreover, as a kind of music critic, and I suppose you'd call me a music historian, although I don't want to, you know, get too grand about it, I'm very interested in the issue of minstrelsy generally and the role that ethnic pastiche and impersonation and minstrelsy has played in the history of American popular music, which is an enormous role and which only, pardon me, only recently, you know, scholars have really begun to get their arms around, because it's just been such, viewed as such troubling stuff. So for that reason, I'm excited to get this stuff out. I should also add that I find lots of these songs incredibly sort of catchy and charming, despite of and sometimes because of their lyrical content. And so I think this stuff is important, long and short of it is. And for that reason, I'm you know, proud of the record.
My guest is Jody Rosen. He compiled an anthology of Yiddish dialect novelty recordings from the early 20th century called Jewface. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Jody Rosen. He's a rock critic who's curated an anthology of Yiddish dialect novelty recordings from the early 20th century called Jewface. Well, you know, the era of these, like, Jewish ethnic recordings is also, as you were saying, the era of minstrelsy and blackface performance. And in fact, some Jewish performers performed in blackface, like Al Jolson and Sophie Tucker. So it almost gets mind-bending to think of all of the kind of bizarre ethnic things going on in some of this music. And a great example of that is a track on your anthology, which is called My Yiddish Mammy. And would you talk a little bit about this track and how, what it makes you think about?
Yeah, well, the song, the recording on the record was from 1922. It's sung by Irving Kaufman, another prominent performer of the era. It was actually co-written by three Jews, including Eddie Cantor, the great vaudevillian. And it's, of course, a parody of Al Jolson's signature tune, My Mammy, which is, you know,
which he used to sing in blackface, right?
Which he used to sing in blackface on Bended Knee. Yeah, and it kind of is a sort of Jewish-themed twist on the whole genre of songs which pine for, you know, both the plantation and the plantation mammy figure. You know, this was the era that the nation was suddenly transformed into this kind of seething polyglot place. And there weren't only Jewish and blackface numbers. There were, you know, Italian dialect numbers. There were Irish dialect songs. There were ones that made fun of the native Yankee New Englanders. There were Chinese-themed songs. And there were frequently songs that kind of made a joke of miscegenation and kind of racial crossover of various sorts. And so this, My Yiddish Mammy is definitely a song in that mode.
Quote a verse, you know, a few lines from the song that you find particularly interesting, and then we'll play it.
I like the lyric that goes, I love my mammy, but she don't come from Alabama. Her heart is filled with love and real sentiment. Her cabin door is in a Bronx tenement. So My Mammy specifically, in all the songs that were about the sort of black mother figure down in Dixie, you know, sort of valorized the mother and had images of, you know, the black woman in a cabin on the plantation. And here this is kind of winked at. But at the same time, there's a kind of sincerity here, because this song is sung in 1922, and you know, the kind of Jewish performer is remembering and valorizing his mother, the immigrant from the Jewish old world.
And can I add one thing to that? That I think it's also satirical in the sense that it's an acknowledgement that for most Jewish immigrants at that time in the United States, they were urban. And they were from the North and not the South, so the whole kind of like Southern mystique was alien to so many of them, not part of their experience at all.
Correct. And what's interesting is that so many prominent Jewish musicians, songwriters, and performers used that completely alien Southern black imagery to kind of get their careers kickstarted. You know, the first big hit by the Gershwins was Swanee.
Mm-hmm.
About the Swanee River. Irving Berlin's first huge hit, the song that made his career, was Alexander's Ragtime Bend, which of course talks about the Swanee River. And there's a famous story about Jolson, who sang, of course, about Swanee repeatedly in many songs, finally seeing the Swanee River and being, he'd imagined some sort of like gushing river of Jordan. And he got down there and he's very disappointed to see that, you know, it looked like just a little trickling creek to him.
Well, you've given us a lot to think about as we listen to this 1922 recording of My Yiddish Mammy, which was co-written by Eddie Cantor and recorded by Irving Kaufman.
Down south where the Swanee River flows, down south and where all the cotton grows, all of the mammies they call divine come from below that old Dixon line. But let me tell you about that dear old mammy of mine. I've got a mammy, but she don't come from Alabama. Her heart is filled with love and real sentiment. Her cabin door is in a Bronx tenement. Believe me, my mammy never heard about dear old Black Joe. She's never been down where the sweet magnolias grow. She don't play a banjo or ukulele, but her lullaby is Ailey, Ailey. That's why I love my Yiddish mammy.
That's My Yiddish Mammy. We'll talk more with Jody Rosen about compiling his anthology of Yiddish dialect novelty recordings after a break. This is Fresh Air. My guest is Jody Rosen, rock critic for Slate magazine. He's put together an anthology of Yiddish dialect novelty recordings from the early 20th century called Jewface. Like blackface material of the same era, the lyrics have a lot of stereotypes from the period. For instance, one of the tracks on Jewface is called When Mose with His Nose Leads the Band. Before we hear it, let's see what Rosen would like us to listen for.
The song was written and recorded in 1906. It was written by a trio of Irish songwriters and recorded by a prominent vocal duo of the period, one of the most prolific recording duos of the acoustic era, of the, you know, the recording era that preceded the advent of electric recording, called Collins and Harlan. They were kind of blackface specialists, but this was their one, as far as I know, their one recorded Jewish turn. The song tells the story of a kind of Jewish John Philip Sousa-style band leader whose nose is so big that he uses it as a conductor's baton. It's historically pretty significant because the first six notes of the chorus of the song are identical to the first six notes of the Irving Berlin song God Bless America. And my theory is Berlin, who was at that time Israel Beilin, he hadn't yet changed his name, was an 18-year-old singing waiter at a saloon in Chinatown, in New York City, heard the song and performed it as a singing waiter. It was his job as a singing waiter to kind of keep up with vaudeville hits and interpolate them into his little act and sing them for his patrons. And so my theory is that he knew this song, and some 12, a dozen years later, when he was, you know, a millionaire songwriter and first sat down to write God Bless America, he subconsciously, I believe, lifted the notes straight out of the When Moe's With His Nose Leads the Band chorus and inserted it right into the beginning of God Bless America, the part that goes, God bless America, forgive my singing. We hear those exact same notes in the chorus, the beginning of the chorus of When Moe's With His Nose Leads the Band. The lyric there is, A, B, then starts to play.
Well, here it is, When Moe's With His Nose Leads the Band.
Down our way every day there's a band.
Life is gay when they play music grand.
When the noisy pig bass drum with their noisy tum-tum-tum,
loud enough to wake up nearly all the land.
Happy Moe's, he just shows all he knows.
When he leaves, he'll be singing report.
No baton does Moe's use, but to think he was refused.
He's unique with nothing else but just his own. Baby then starts to play.
Plays all day.
Oh, then says, sound your A,
B, but A.
My yells, I want to play.
We shall play.
He knows the whole band.
Band, and I gotta say it.
Band, they'll start in to blow.
Not their dough.
Sweet things we all do know.
And right I go.
Oi, 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 but it's not. When Moe's with his nose leads the band.
Okay, that's a 1906 recording, When Moe's With His Nose Leads the Band, from the anthology Jewface, which was curated by my guest Jody Rosen. Jody, you put this together at a time, and we're listening to this at a time when I think Americans are really trying to figure out where is the line between like self-deprecating humor and racism. And I'm thinking in particular, or anti-Semitism, I'm thinking in particular here of like the Borat movie, which is probably in a category all by itself. But, you know, as everybody knows now, Sacha Baron Cohen is Jewish, and he uses a lot of anti-Semitic humor within the movie and used it within the Ali G show for his character Borat to mock anti-Semitism, not to be anti-Semitic. But it still upsets a lot of people. And I guess the best example of that is his song Throw the Jew Down the Well, which was sung on the Ali G show. Borat sung that on the Ali G show. It was actually recorded at a bar for the program. And the chorus is, throw the Jew down the well so my country can be free. You must grab him by the horn, then we have a big party. What's your reaction listening to this, given that you've been trying to find these, you know, early 20th century ethnic Jewish humor recordings? For 10 years you've been doing this.
Well, you know, there's an interesting connection, because Sacha Baron Cohen with Borat is portraying a kind of, you know, newly arrived greenhorn immigrant who's mangling the English language and kind of bumbling around the country, misapprehending the customs and getting himself into all kinds of trouble in the process. Now, of course, Sacha Baron Cohen's act is this wonderful, deeply satiric and very politically pointed postmodern act, which is a world away from what the vaudevillians were doing. Sacha Baron Cohen, he's obviously sort of using that song, Throw the Jew Down the Well, to expose anti-Semitism and to indict anti-Semites. What the Jews who sang songs like Cohen Owes Me $97 and, you know, I'm a Yiddish Cowboy and Under the Matzah Tree and these other funny, crazy songs that are on the Jewface compilation, they were, generally speaking, newly arrived Jewish immigrants, or kind of first-generation naturalized Jewish Americans. And they had a kind of precarious social status, and this was a time in the country, you know, the kind of melting pot progressive era, when there was an enormous amount of social pressure to assimilate and indeed a, you know, a huge desire on the part of so many immigrants, especially Jews, to assimilate and kind of cast off their, you know, the kind of trappings of their old world identity and become American. And what I think is very interesting about these songs is that, you know, the audience and the performers kind of use them, because in sending up the greenhorn Jew, the old world Jew, by laughing at that Jewish type, the audience is kind of asserted their own Americanness and their sophistication and the fact that they'd passed out of their own greenhorn phase and the fact that they were now themselves, you know, a different kind of, you know, American Jew.
Well, Jody Rosen, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Jerry.
Jody Rosen is rock critic for Slate Magazine. He curated the new CD of Yiddish dialect novelty recordings called Jewface. Fresh Air's executive producer is Danny Miller. Our interviews and reviews are produced and edited by Amy Sallet, Phyllis Myers, Monique Nazareth, Anne-Marie Baldonado, Ian Chilag, Patty Leswing, Sam Brigger, and Jonathan Menjivar. I'm Terry Gross.